Hello, my name is Nathan Clark, and I'm going to be interviewing Mr. Douglas Christie. Mr. Christie is both a lawyer and a political activist. He has been a longtime advocate for Western separatists. Today I'd like to interview Mr. Christie about his views. Mr. Christie, what exactly is Western separatist?
Well, Nathan, I'm very grateful that you asked, because it's important to clearly define what Western separatism means. And to put it simply, it's the right of a province, any province actually, but certainly any province in Western Canada, to choose to be independent of Canada, a whole new nation chosen by referendum in each province. Western Canadians, as I see it, would benefit from real sovereignty, total independence from Canada, a new nation chosen by a referendum in each province, with a clear question: do you want our province to separate from Canada and form a new nation? And a clear majority, which would be 55%. So with those two things, we could create a whole new nation. Our own constitution, one language, one government, one central authority to decide our laws, our own Supreme Court, everything. We could do this better for ourselves than Ottawa will ever do it. So that's what I think. Process. But the most important thing is that Western Canadians need the power to decide how their government will be, you know, with a regionally elected Senate, so that there's no Toronto of Western Canada running everything, as there is in Ottawa. And with the right of referendum, initiative and recall, so that people between elections would have power to change things, to make laws. And you see, we all feel frustrated between elections in Ottawa because we can't do anything about it. They do whatever they want. And we also know that during elections, all the votes of Western Canada don't count because the government's elected before they count any ballots west of the Lakehead. The end result being that we could create a better country with choices for the people here, made by the people here, that would really determine how we are governed as a real democratic nation.
And why do you feel so strongly about this subject?
Well, it's not one thing. It's a whole series of things. But the basis of it all is that Quebec and Ontario have all the necessary seats in the House of Commons to control the whole thing. And yet, Western Canadian resources are the backbone of the Canadian economy. You see, you'll notice this when the price of oil drops, the value of the Canadian dollar drops, because it's basically Western oil, and now to some extent Newfoundland oil, that will be supporting the whole Canadian economy. It's not the auto manufacturing sector of Windsor and Oshawa, because after all, the branch plant economies of the United States, they do not create any new wealth, and their product is not really that competitive anymore. The Japanese make better cars quicker and cheaper. So there's nothing Western Canadians need that they couldn't get better, quicker, and cheaper somewhere else in the rest of the world than we now are forced to buy from Ontario and Quebec. And yet Ontario and Quebec control the whole legislative process. For instance, in the Supreme Court of Canada, there are 9 judges, 3 from Ontario, 3 from Quebec, always the same by law, so 6 out of 9 from 2 provinces. Mm-hmm. And they decide really what the laws of Parliament are, because they rule on whether they're constitutional or not. So you see, the power in Canada is concentrated in 2 provinces, and those 2 provinces elect the government, appoint the Supreme Court, and basically get all the benefits of equalization. Certainly Quebec did in the past, and now to some extent Ontario will in the future. So it's 2 provinces running the whole country. So there's an integration of power in the United States that keeps it together. There's no such thing in Canada, and there never will be, because constitutional reform, to enable that to happen, would require consent from Ontario and Quebec. So you see, they're not going to give up that power. So that's why I passionately and firmly believe that Western independence is a better way to govern ourselves than in this very frustrating political institution called Canada that was created in 1867 with ideas that are not modern, for a time when we took weeks to travel across the country. You see, with modern technology, we could have referenda, initiative, and recall occurring on a daily basis using the telephone, computers, and television. You could watch the debates and vote on them. The people could vote as if they were sitting in the House of Commons. Imagine. We wouldn't need somebody who says, I'm not interested in your opinion, I've made up my mind, and I'm voting because I'm your Member of Parliament. That wouldn't work. We could build things that would reflect the will of the people on a day-to-day basis. And decisions can be made quickly, democratically, and cheaply. Using, you know, you've seen the system where, you watch television, you see programs where you vote on this dancer or that dancer, or this singer or that singer, and it can be done on a much larger scale, very quickly, and, it, you know, on very serious issues. I'm not saying that we want to vote as if we're voting on a dance competition. Not at all. I mean by that 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 system can be used to resolve serious questions. And so your opinion and my opinion would really count. We would actually be involved in the process, and probably we'd pay a whole lot more attention. But that'll never happen in this antiquated system in Ottawa.
With that in mind, do you believe that a country called Western Canada can exist, and if so, when?
Well, yes, I do. Because Western Canada has a legal right to separate, it has an abundance of resources, it has fishery, forestry, mining, agriculture, petroleum, natural gas, fresh water, a beautiful environment that we deserve and we desire to protect. We have all the resource base necessary. We have a population of relatively intelligent people. We're not stupid. We're not, you know, they're not geniuses in Ontario and Quebec. They're people just like us. We have the modern technology capable of communication at a very rapid rate. And I guess the question then you ask is, when? Well, when people wake up to what we could be and realize what there is, I think then you'll see change. And my job is to try and communicate this change. We have a peaceful right to do these things democratically. This is not a revolutionary idea. Nobody has to be hurt, and there's no need for violence, and there's no need for even animosity. It's not necessary. The people of Ontario and Quebec can govern themselves, particularly Quebec. They have their language. We have a common language. You know, we don't have a language in common with Quebec. Most people don't speak French. In fact, the languages that are more prolific would be probably Cantonese, Punjabi. God knows there's many languages. The important thing is we do need a common language. One common language makes a country cohesive. Not that it's a better language or a worse language. It's just that it is a common language. We do need it. And bilingualism never really worked. You know, it was really a failure. And it was a bit of a costly fraud, really.
So what impact does the current situation in Ottawa have on Western separatism?
Well, what we've seen, it may resolve itself before the end of January. Mr. Ignatieff seems to be able to bridge the gap a little better than Mr. Dion, probably because he actually speaks English better. But at the time when, you know, in December, when the coalition was a really viable option, it demonstrated that with 77% of all the seats, in Western Canada. I've got to shut that up. It's okay. You can do what you like with that. But when you see, there were 77% of all the seats in Western Canada were conservative. Now, whether we like conservatives or don't, doesn't really matter. That was the majority of the wishes of people of Western Canada. And in spite of that, with 77% of the seats, there could be a government established that didn't have more than, you know, what's the remainder? 23% of the seats could govern the country of Western Canada. And I call it a country because it's a different country. So you could see the frustration was enormous. And that situation stimulated a lot of people to say, well, I've had it. That's it. I now see the point of separatism. Well, this is only temporary. This is not something that's going to last. But I say these various crises, there will be many more, and there have been in the past, will constantly bring to people's attention the fundamental flaw in the foundation of the whole system. We therefore benefit from these times when people actually see how the system works. Most of the time people say, look, I don't want to know about politics. It's too frustrating, or alternatively, it's too boring. Canadian politics is very boring. And Canadian politicians, by and large, are boring. And as a result, people don't pay attention until it hurts them. Well, it hurt them. In Western Canada, it really hurt them to see that a coalition of NDPers and liberals, could be the government when the vast majority of Western Canadians voted against it. So you can see the alienation. The same thing happened in the national energy policy.
Mr. Christie, do you see any future of Western separatist movement developing in the future?
Well, yeah, it's always growing, you know, and the fact is it will continue to grow because more and more people get frustrated. Especially people in your generation. Younger people are going to see the tax burden of Canada, and it's just a bureaucratic morass. Did you know that we have 11 departments of agriculture? One for every province and a federal one. We have departments of fisheries, some of them rather small, provincially, plus federally. We have duplications at every level, and you and I are going to have to pay for it. In fact, you'll pay way more than I did, because taxes are not going down, they're going up. You're going to come to the point where you're going to wonder, why am I working? What is the point? They're going to take all my money. And they don't guarantee you a pension. Forget it. They're so far in debt. They're not going to be able to pay you unless they can rob another generation that will come after you. This is a parasitic system. And young people are going to realize as they get older, they start to pay taxes and, you know, maybe want to keep a bit of their own money. They're going to get very angry at the way this system works as they realize it. Generally speaking, young people don't care about politics, right? There's other things that interest them, and that's fine. Everybody was young once, but let me tell you, it will get you when you start to go to work. And when you want a future. And when you realize that if you don't speak French, for instance, you're not going to get a job in the federal civil service, forget it. And eventually in the armed forces, too. You might get up to a certain level. You'll never get beyond it. These are frustrations and insights that take time to realize. But I can assure you that over time and in the future, more of these problems will arise, and Western separatism is going to look better and better.
How is Western separatism similar to or different than Quebec separatism?
You know, that's a really good question because it gets to the fundamentals of what motivates Quebec separatism and what motivates Western separatism. Western separatism is primarily focused on economic reality, the resource wealth of the West going to support the bureaucratic government of the East. That's basically what over time has been the main thrust, and the controlling power in the House of Commons of Quebec and Ontario. Those are the political realities and the economic realities. Actually, it's quite the reverse for Quebec. Quebec's motivation is culture and language. And they really are ethnically cohesive. And by that I mean there is a Quebecer identity. This is actually more binding and more emotionally driven than Western separatism, which is rather intellectual at times. I mean, it's a bit visceral for me because I've really fought for this. But for most people, it would be sort of an intellectual thing. And it's true that emotions drive a whole lot more in people than the mind, the intellect. Or economics. But when economics takes away from your stomach, takes away from your job, takes away from your future, then economics gets emotional too. And I can assure you, it will. But Quebec separatism is emotional. They have been major beneficiaries of equalization to the tune of $3 billion a year when we were counting in the 1980s. I've been in this a long time. So it's much bigger now. And so, you see, Quebec really couldn't afford to separate with the same level of affluence. And their influence in Ottawa is tremendous. That's the difference. Quebec's separatism is emotional, language, and culture. Ours is economic and political. Those are the two major differences.
Do you see any future of United Canada staying together and working together to work through its problems?
Well, there's a good chance that Canada will stay together. But dysfunctionally, It won't work through any problems. It will stagger along in kind of a frustrated rut of stumbling from crisis to crisis, waiting for the United States to make decisions so we can follow suit, making no commitments to a long-term plan for future economic development. No, that's not going to happen, because Ontario and Quebec have no future. Economically, they have no future. Ontario particularly has a manufacturing base, limited resource base, and has a huge population. It's very diverse, and Toronto is not a happy place to live. It's getting to be more of a difficult place to live. So in the long run, the longer Canada stays together, the more dysfunctional it will become. And unfortunately, that's going to motivate separatism, and over the long run, Canada will not continue to exist. How long? Nobody knows. But, you know, it's true that more countries have come into existence in the last 20 years than ever existed before. And since the Second World War, I mean, all these countries that have become independent. Just recently, the Governor General was in Europe, and she was in the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Slovenia. Three countries that 20 years ago didn't exist. They're peaceful, democratic countries today that are prospering, separate and apart from each other, probably better friends and neighbors than they were when they were in one country. You know, Yugoslavia was not a happy place. Croatia is better off as Croatia than it was part of Yugoslavia. And the same goes for Slovenia, which was a part of Yugoslavia as well. So it's not a bad thing that countries break up. God did not create Canada, you know. A lot of people don't realize that. It was just a human creation. It's a political arrangement. It's not divinely ordained. And I personally, I don't feel any emotional attachment to the Canadian flag. It's as straightforward as that. And I know some people would like to, and some people do. But not me. To me, it was an institutional symbol established to ratify the Liberal Party's almost perpetual hammerlock on power, which they've had for the vast majority of the last 100 years. But ultimately, we can do better, and I think we should. And we will have the chance over time to develop a new political ideology about how we should govern ourselves.
What might you say to people who might call you a disloyal Canadian?
Well, in one sense, it might be true. I'm not particularly loyal to the institutions of the House of Commons in Canada or the Senate. I'm subordinate to it. I pay my taxes. I obey the laws of Canada. But I find them very frustrating, and they're very convoluted. My emotional attachment is to a country that no longer exists. And you know what I'd really like? I'd really like a country that I could feel as much love and devotion for as I felt for that. But it's gone. And I don't want to lament the past. It's finished. But we could build something that would motivate my son and maybe my granddaughter or grandsons and daughter to have a symbolic union with a nation that would have as much emotional appeal as that had for me. That would be a very great gift that I could give them, and I'd like to do that.
Mr. Christie, is there anything you'd like to say or conclude with?
Well, of course, the things I've talked about will only be possible if young people like yourself, Nathan, and others see some value in them. And of course, I believe in them. But it's up to you who will see and judge what I've had to say. First of all, what do you think of it? And the more important question is, what are you going to do about it? Because if all I do is speak, and all you do is listen, nothing changes. So my hope is that those who might see this little discussion we've had will realize certain things that are very important and will take the time to investigate whether what I've said is true. And having examined it, if they conclude it is true, then they must do something to create this better new nation that I would very much like to see for you, for me, for those of us who will come after.
Mr. Christie, thank you very much for meeting with me today.
Well, thank you for being interested and taking the time. I thought it was very innovative and very serious inquiry into a subject that I think deserves consideration. And I'd like to thank you for taking your time, because your time is as valuable as mine, although I've got less of it than you have, as we discover as time goes on. It's good to meet you.
Good.